Hare Krishna. Welcome. This is, believe it or not, this is the fifth in our series. We'll shoot for going for 10 in this series, at least. See how far we get. We began reading an article. We haven't finished that article yet. Those of you who are here for the first time, we've been reading an article for the last four sessions about the nature of men, nature of women, in order to help us understand better the explanations of how women and men interrelated within Vedic culture, because as most of you know, or many of you know, it's sometimes difficult to understand these traditional values that seem outdated or seem impractical in modern days. So we're trying to understand both within the context of the culture they came from and in modern context how they're still applicable or what is applicable. And some of you who have been with me for the last year or however long I've been doing this, it's probably been about a year and a half now, may remember Benevolent Bear. Any of you out there remember Benevolent Bear? He used to join us every week, I think especially when we were doing the Japa retreats. Any of you remember him? Bhakti and Carol, you remember him? Or Patrick, or I don't know if Manjesh, you were there. Bhakti and Carol, you must remember Benevolent Bear. So Benevolent Bear sent me an email on Facebook the other day. Benevolent Bear is, or Spiritual Sky, you remember Benevolent Bear? Benevolent Bear is now living in the San Diego Temple, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. So he was just letting me know how Krishna.com has helped him make that transition into becoming a full-time devotee. And so that was nice. I thought I'd relate that for those of you who remember Benevolent Bear, otherwise now known as Bhakta Ben in San Diego. Spiritual Sky, you don't remember him. Oh, it must have been a long time ago. Okay, so we've been reading about the nature of women. And one thing I wanted to relate, which I heard many years ago, in the military, as you know, they have both men and women, but they found it handicapped the men, not for reasons you might think, to have the women closely associated with the men, especially in battle. You might think, well, it became a sexual thing. No, that's not, I mean, that might have been there, but what happened was it said that the men, their nature is so protective over women that it was getting in the way of them being able to fight because they were so concerned about taking care of women. So that's man's nature, at least in a normal state, that he wants to take care of women. He wants to protect them. Unless the man is just, become weak, so weak that he can hardly take care of a woman or maybe can't even take care of himself. And naturally, it's the woman's nature to take that protection from the man. And so that's the basis of what we've been discussing and the basis of what, when Prabhupada speaks about women, this is one of the foundational points he makes, that it's the male psychology to take care, to protect, and the female psychology to be protected. And when men do not properly take care of women, then the women are forced to be independent or desire to be independent. And that creates many problems, which we've discussed. So we're almost finished with this article. I wanted to read the last three paragraphs. And if you have anything to comment on while we're reading it, please feel free to comment. In the Vedic culture, men were educated to see every woman, except for their wife, as a mother, Mataji. Mata means mother, and ji means respectful. So mata ji means respected mother. That means that she is not a sexual object for their pleasure, but an object of respect. The protection of the father, husband, and son is not meant to lock her at home and hide her from the world, but to implant in her a sense of security and belonging. which she requires as prakriti. Prakriti means the enjoyed. For her different occupations and contacts with the world, I'll read that again, the protection of the father, husband, and son is not meant to lock her at home and hide her from the world, but to implant in her a sense of security and belonging, which she requires as prakriti, for her different occupations and contacts with the world. In other words, just to be peaceful, to exist peacefully. When men are not peaceful, women are not peaceful, what happens? Married couples are not happy, they find other partners, the family becomes disrupted. It's a problem. So women are well taken care of, they're happy, and they make their husbands happy. When they're not well taken care of, they make their husbands unhappy, because they're unhappy. In any case, when a woman is not defined through a connection with a man, she is prone to anxiety, and in her attempts to obtain the security of a Purusha, she is forced to appeal to her lower nature, the sexual and seductive. So what she's saying, it's natural for a woman to be cared for by a man. When she isn't, then, whoops. When she isn't, then she tends to magnify this seductive sexual side of her, to attract men, to get attention, become object of many men's attention, not just one, her husband, but many, and feel loved and cared for. It goes so deep that I heard a story, I don't remember if I told you this, but I heard a story that one girl, when she was very young, she was being raped regularly by her father. And when she got a little older, her father was raping her sister. And although being raped by her father was causing her all kinds of emotional problems, she equated it with affection. And when he no longer was raping her, she wanted him to rape her because she wanted that affection. So of course that's perverted, and that's sad, and it's sick, and these things are going on in this sick society. But it shows how much a daughter needs the love of her father, how much a woman needs the love of an affection of another man, in most cases. And how that is stabilizing and satisfying for her. And you'll see if you know any women who are not married or not happily married, generally you'll see they're not really completely satisfied, because in general, for most women, that's what they want, that's what they need. So of course it may not be possible for all women, or women may have been divorced and they may not be able to get married or no longer want to because of bad experiences. So we're talking about general principles, and we're trying to understand, why is it that Prabhupada's saying a woman should be protected by her father, her husband, and her sons in old age? We're making the point that that's her nature, and that in our society, that nature is not being protected, so women become so-called liberated, and then in that liberation become seductive, which of course in this age most men like, because it means that they can enjoy with that woman freely. Whereas in a society which is more chaste or sexually controlled, the only woman generally a man will be able to enjoy with is either his wife or a prostitute. But not just that, there'll be free rein if he knows how to play the field, that he can get so many women. That's a symptom of a society that's battling with the mode of ignorance and lacks the culture necessary for cultivating higher values. So let's continue reading. A word on men. Now we get to talk about men. Dysfunctional maternity produces children with emotional lacks. In other words, bad relationships with one's mother or dysfunctional family produces a child with emotional lacks. Such children grow naturally into adults, us, In any event, a man who carries emotional lacks with him becomes emotionally dependent on a woman and needs her like a mother. Like sometimes men, when they marry, their wives become more like mothers than wives because of their own weakness. They're grown men, they still need a mother. Such a childish man, which most men are today. Hey, you're gonna take that from her? We don't even know who wrote this article, but you're gonna take that? Such a childish man, which most men are today, is not very strong. A woman, however, is dependent by nature, and therefore she is not weakened by a state of dependence. In other words, it's her nature to be dependent. She's not weakened. Actually, it gives her strength in a sense, because that's her nature. But a weak man, it's not his nature. His nature is to be protective, to be strong. In fact, due to neediness, such a man repeatedly glides towards his weak side, emotionality, which is the woman's strong side. Therefore, for many reasons, materialistic society increases the power of woman and decreases the independent and autonomous position of men. Undoubtedly, in such a state, men cannot function as a source of inspiration or protection for women, and not even for themselves. And this is the face of society today. I'll read that again, in case you didn't get it all. I'll go back a little. A woman is, however, is dependent by nature, and such a man, this weak man, who needs a woman to be more like a mother, rather than protecting and taking care of her, he needs her to take care of him. This man repeatedly glides towards his weaker side, his emotional side. But the emotional side is the woman's strong side. Therefore, for many reasons, a materialistic society increases the power of women and decreases the independent and autonomous position of men. In other words, when men are strong, they're autonomous, they're independent, they stand on their own two feet, and women can take shelter of them and they can give guidance. But when men are weak, then the woman becomes like the mother. And I'm sure many of you women out there have had relationships, or either know men or have had relationships with men who are just like this. And you kind of had to take care of them, and they were falling apart all the time on you. It's not really good for you. I mean, you know, if they're friends and you want to help them, but as far as a relationship, that's something else. For many reasons, a materialistic society increases the power of women and decreases the independent and autonomous power of men. Undoubtedly, in such a state, men cannot function as a source of inspiration or protection for women, and not even for themselves. Thus, one who is not emotionally satisfied must constantly look for more external stimuli, although these can never bring about real satisfaction. A society of such dissatisfied people is neither stable nor peaceful. Such a society is the outcome of dysfunctional maternity. Dysfunctional maternity is the result of a material sexual environment, and such a material environment, which regards sense gratification as the ultimate goal, is the consequence of eschewing the spiritual ideal, which alone enables true growth and freedom. That was a mouthful. Let me read that again. Thus, one who is not emotionally satisfied must constantly look for more external stimuli, although these can never bring about real satisfaction. So, Grihastha ashram is an ashram. So either one is going to be single and happy and sense-controlled, or one is going to be married and happy and sense-controlled. So, and then when you don't have a Grihastha ashram in which a woman can rely on a man and a man is independently strong and a woman doesn't feel the need to exert her independence to such a degree that it's unhealthy for her and it's unhealthy for her husband. In a situation such as that, then there's stability and it's easier to practice Krishna consciousness because people are peaceful. And that's, it's important to be materially peaceful. Such a society is the society which is not what we've just described, but the society where these dysfunctions are going on. Such a society is the outcome of dysfunctional maternity. In other words, you're raised in a dysfunctional environment. Dysfunctional maternity is the result of a material sexual environment. And such a material environment, which regards sense gratification as the ultimate goal, is the consequence of eschewing the spiritual idea, which alone enables true growth and freedom. So, of course, when there's no spiritual values, then the more society becomes degraded, the more sex becomes the center. And that's, everything evolves around that. So, very important for women, particularly in this age, to get their self-worth from their sexual appeal. Not from cultivating womanly qualities and motherly qualities, but cultivating qualities to stimulate or sexually disturb men. That's where they're getting their value more and more. In light of this, if we now return to Srila Prabhupada's lines at the beginning of the article, we may understand them differently. So let's read those. They were pretty heavy. Now, let's read what Prabhupada said at the beginning and see if this all makes sense. Good population in human society is the basic principle for peace, prosperity, and spiritual progress in life. What does Prabhupada mean by good population? He means children born into good families because they're wanted. Good mothers, good fathers. Religion's principles were so designed that good population would prevail in society for the general spiritual progress of state and community. Such population depends on the chastity and faithfulness of its womanhood. As children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly very prone to degradation. Therefore, what does Prabhupada mean by degradation? Well, there have been incidents in the Hare Krishna movement, unfortunate instances, in which either married women or single women engaged in illicit sexual activity with another man, either married or not. And when this came to Prabhupada's attention, he never blamed the woman, he always blamed the man. Why is that so? He said, because the man is expected to be more disciplined by nature, of his psychophysical nature. He's expected to be more self-controlled and self-disciplined. So he never blamed the woman. He said, it's not her fault, because by nature, it's the man's fault, because he can more easily seduce a woman than a woman could seduce him. He is supposed to be the protector of women. He's supposed to have finer intelligence to discriminate between matter and spirit. That's generally how Prabhupada saw that. He saw that by nature, a woman tends to be more attached to her body or less self-controlled. And so that's what he means here. When he says women are a little bit like children, and he defines, intelligence is defined, at least in one way it's defined, it's just, you know, the ability to understand that I'm not the body. Ability to discriminate with the use of intelligence. So, women in general tend to be a little more attached to the body, how they look, a little more attached to family. Not all women, not always. So, it doesn't mean women aren't smart, and women can't do so many things. They can't become professors. They can't become good at anything. There's so many women are so smart in so many areas. So when Prabhupada's talking about this, he's talking about a certain nature or an aspect of women that, in general, it's easier for men to understand certain subtle spiritual concepts and realize them than it is for women, although that's a broad generalization. And I might be kicked off Krishna.com for saying that, but I'm trying to explain how and why why Prabhupada's saying these things, what he means by this. As children are very prone to be misled, women are similarly very prone to degradation. Therefore, both children and women require protection by the elder members of the family. In other words, another explanation of this is a man comes, he makes the woman believe that he loves her, gets her pregnant, and goes away. That's very common. So Prabhupada's making that point. There are actually books about this to help women understand these guys really don't love you, they're just after sex, and you should be smart enough to understand that. So protection means to help women understand that this is the nature of men, and this is often what they want, and so be careful. According to Chanaka, famous Brahmin advisor, women are generally not very intelligent and therefore not trustworthy. So the different family traditions of religious activities should always engage them, and thus their chastity and devotion will give birth to good population eligible for participating in the Varnashram system. And in other words, the point here again is chastity. And so the point Prabhupada's making is women may be prone to be unchaste unless they are protected, unless they have a good husband, good father, good family, higher values. And if they have those things, then naturally the nature to be chaste will be there. But if that's not there, that training's not there, or the social system doesn't support that, then they can become easily exploited by a man. And then again, they go back to the side where they feel valued when they're sexually attractive. And when men are sexually attractive, they feel that's their worth. And then men take advantage of that. And men exploit them, get them pregnant, leave them. And I actually read a book about this. And what was the title of that book? That book was something like, what was the name of that? Something like, you know, like 10 Things Every Girl Should Know. And it's basically explaining to young women the nature of men and how men are wired. And if you're not careful, they'll take advantage of you for sexual satisfaction without any inclination or desire or intention to ever marry you or take care of you, or really be deeply concerned about your feelings. And so the book explains different ways that happens. I read it once, I thought it was interesting, because I have a daughter, I thought I would read the book, and when she's older, I'd give it to her. And so it's very good. So I think if we understand it in that light, what Prabhupada's saying, that they want to be protected, they should be protected, it's their nature, they're happy that way. And then there's a chaste social system in which good population can come. Families will be strong, and that becomes a foundation for Krishna consciousness. Okay. Anushka Patel. I don't understand your question. Are you? You may be talking to somebody else, but generally, when we're having these shows, we want to keep the chat in regard to the topic. Now, does anybody have any questions or disagreements or insight that they'd like to share before we go on? Because we're going to go on and talk more about the same thing as it comes up in Srila Prabhupada's books. Last week we were also talking about, well, at what point does a woman have a right to leave her husband? That question came up. Last week, you remember another question that came up? Interesting question. If a wife wants to practice sexual restraint and the husband doesn't, is the wife obliged, or what should the wife do? In other words, how you could reword that question and say, well, how submissive should a woman be to a husband who's not perfectly following religious principles? Yeah, Anushka, you're talking about Srila Prabhupada's book, Second Chance, and the story about Ajahn. I don't know how it relates to what we're talking about. That's what I was wondering, if it does relate or doesn't relate. Well, maybe it does relate, yeah. If you can explain how it, I mean, I could think of how it relates. Okay, let me, Anushka, if you could explain how you're relating this, and I'm going to read what Bhaktin Carol says. She says, I agree. So totally true that males in the main culture are interested in sexual relationship with women. That's the basis. Women, I know this. Men want relations with beautiful women, with fat women, with sick women, with disabled women. Seems with all women. I don't know if I told you the story, but I'll tell it. I was once taking a walk, japa walk, with Giriraj Swami. And we were walking through a neighborhood, and there was a very short woman sitting at a bus stop, and she was overweight. So because she was very short and overweight, she was very unattractive. She was kind of very round because you know, she was very heavy, but she wasn't very tall. So, you know, if a woman's heavy but tall, it has some figure, but she was very round, almost like a ball. So I commented to Maharaj, I was saying that, and the Prabhupada says in the Bhagavatam that in this age of Kali, he said, women dress in a way to seduce men. They dress in a very seductive way. And the connotation of that, excuse me, the connotation, as I gather it from Prabhupada's statement, he said they dress in an overly attractive fashion to victimize the minds of men, or either to victimize consciously, or men are victimized, even if the women aren't trying to. They're just dressing that way. So my understanding is that in traditional cultures, women didn't dress to victimize men's mind. They didn't dress in an overly attractive fashion. They dressed attractively for their husbands, but not for other men. So living in a society like that, men have to constantly deal with the attraction, they have to deal with attractive women, even if the men are married. They're attractive women everywhere, and they dress in a way to be more attractive. So men have to constantly deal with that. So this woman was not very attractive. So I turned to Maharaj and I said, if all women in this world were no more attractive than her, then it would be so much easier for us to be Krishna conscious. But it's so difficult when so many women are dressing, you know, we say dressed to kill, on the prowl, dressed to kill. So Maharaj told me that Prabhupada had said, he said, when a man is lusty, any body will do. Any body will do. And it's interesting because what happens when a man is lusty is that he depersonalizes the woman. And it's just the body. It doesn't matter that this woman has feelings or has a family or a past, a future, a life. It's just she's now an object for him. So when his lust reaches a certain point, then he just needs a body. Any warm body will do. So that's kind of sick, but it's true, unfortunately. So Radha Krishna, we'll go back to Radha Krishna's point. Radha Krishna is saying, Devi Dasi is saying, ideally a good couple would have worked out what they both want out of a relationship before entering into it and being on the same page. Yes, very good point. It does relate about, because he was married and he had a relationship with a prostitute. Yes, exactly. That is in response to the question about submissiveness and a woman's right to refuse sex from her husband. So this was a question you asked last week. But doesn't that go the other way? As far as women also being attracted by men, there's definitely some peacock strutting around as well on the other side. Okay, very good points and a good question, so let's go back to that. The story of Ajamil, if you remember, Ajamil was a really good Brahmin, very, very strict. And he had a really nice wife. She was very beautiful and very chaste. And Ajamil was out one day. I believe he was collecting flowers to do puja. And he saw a couple basically naked, or almost naked, and having sex or close to it. And he'd never seen that before. And disturbed his mind to the point that he went out and found a prostitute. It just created an impression on him so deeply that he wanted to do the same thing. And he found a prostitute. And he became so attached to the prostitute, he left his wife and married her. So that's a reality or a potential problem that any man faces. So what does that mean? I developed a class on sexual purity. I'm actually giving it March, I think the date is the 13th. It's 2 weekends from now, or 3 weekends from now. It'll be 3 weekends or so. I believe it's on a... Anyway, one of those days. March, it'll be 13th or 14th. Yeah, 13th or 14th. I have to check, because there's a marriage one of those days in Alachua. If you want to come to Alachua for the class, just email me, mahat@aol.com. This is only for men, but this relates to what we're talking about. So, one of the things that I've observed, or one of the things that I've come to understand, is that in Greek, the word for sexual attraction is porneia, from which we get the word pornography. But, you know, most men, you know, they have a concept of what pornography is and what pornography isn't. But actually, if you're really sensitive to it, pornography is really anything that excites you sexually. So it doesn't have to necessarily be what we consider pornography. It could be just seeing an attractive woman dressed well, but being sexually disturbed by that. And so as I was looking at that more and more carefully and looking around me, I got a magazine. I was looking through a magazine on yoga. And if you've ever looked at any yoga magazines, it's mostly women in very tight clothes. Now, women will look at the magazine and they won't think anything of it. They'll just think these are good clothes for doing yoga. Many men, unfortunately, will look at those magazines and become very attracted to the women in those magazines. Like, although the women are dressed, but some men will get disturbed by that, by seeing that. So actually for those men, that's pornography, because it disturbs them and it creates a samskara, an impression, which is increasing their desire to enjoy the opposite sex, or again, to depersonalize women. So what happened to Ajamil happens to a lot of men. It happens to pastors. It happens to CEOs. It happens to presidents of universities. Not that they necessarily saw someone in the street doing it, but pornography is available everywhere. And if you look at society, let's say 100 years ago, 150 years ago, what was available on billboards and magazines in terms of how women presented themselves, and you see what's available now just everywhere on, you know, on a candy wrapper, whatever, I propose, or I suggest, that 100 or 200 years ago, they would look at most of what we now take for granted on the covers of magazines, and they would look at that as pornography. But we become insensitive to it. And men are so sexually disturbed, they don't even notice it. They never get peaceful enough to notice that something's agitating them, because they're always agitated. As we said last week, men think of sex every 20 seconds. They get a 19-second break if they're lucky. I don't know where that's documented, but some men don't stop thinking of it. Anyway, so that's what happened to Ajamil. So yes, Ajamil left a good family. Then what happened was he went with this prostitute. And Prabhupada said at that point he became degraded. And he became a thief. And I think he was became a drunkard also. You know, just he lost it all. And Prabhupada said it's because he was not sexually controlled that he became degraded. So Prabhupada equated sexual control with purity and elevation, and lack of control with degradation. And he just showed you in Ajamil's life what was happening to Ajamil and how he's becoming degraded because of that connection with a low class woman. It's interesting, in the Bible it says when a man and woman have sex, the body becomes one. So now Ajamil became one with a prostitute. Interesting, isn't it? Okay. Ladies, if you marry, understand that your husband, no matter how good a husband he is, how Krishna conscious he is, he's a potential Ajamil. And one of the things that may push him to become an Ajamil is if the relationship you have is not good. Because if it's not good, he begins to look at other women. Men are already geared to look at other women, even when they have good relationships. If they're not spiritually strong, they're geared to look at attractive women, even when they have good relationships with their wives or girlfriends. So the story of Ajamil is very interesting. What happened to him is very, very interesting. How quickly he became degraded, and how for so long. And he remained degraded. And when he was saved by the Vishnu Dutas, he became remorseful. And then he said, I was such an idiot. I gave up a chaste wife for a prostitute. So he lost his mind, basically. So men are wired in a way that they can very easily lose their mind when there's an attractive woman. You'll read in Bhagavatam stories of attractive women appearing and men falling off their horses. For the ladies, you think that's like, you can't relate to that. But a man sees that woman obviously must have been quite attractive in those days. You see, a woman so attractive that they'd fall off their horse and they'd faint. So, the example I give is, I don't know if you ever had the experience, you're really, really, really hungry. Like you just have to eat something. You ever had that experience where you're just like, I have to eat. I can't, like can't go another minute. Any of you out there ever had that experience? You just have to eat. Yeah. Now, what if you were like, you're at that point where it's like if you didn't eat, you're going to blow up the universe, right? Or you're going to blow up the person next to you and beat them up or scream at them or go into a grocery store and steal something. You're just, at that point. And right at that point, there you see something. It was one of your favorite foods. It's like, this is it. It's like, right there, you're at the point. Your favorite food just appears in front of you. It's like you couldn't ask for anything better. But you're not allowed to eat it. Would that be difficult? Well, ladies, that's what it's like for a boy to be 16 years old and see an attractive woman. That's what it's like. Yes, believe it or not. So you do not want to be that attractive food because that boy is always hungry. And not only is a 16-year-old hungry, so is the 22-year-old, and so is the 40-year-old, and so is it. That's how men are wired. But according to their culture and maturity and self-discipline and their principles and their values and their religion, they control that. But at any point in time, they can become weak and just go off and become a jhanyu. So Grihastha life is meant to protect that man. The kind and loving wife protects that man from running off with a prostitute like women. Because so many women out there, they're ready to enjoy with a married man. So although they're officially not prostitutes, technically by Vedic terms, those women are prostitutes. They just don't charge. they'll charge with a meal and a movie. That's about it. So what's in the news lately? Tiger Woods and his girlfriend, and he has his mistress, and you know. So these things are so common. They're just, you know, if you look behind the curtain, they're happening everywhere. So, okay. So now, okay, so Radha Krishna is saying, we're way behind all your discussion, but I'll get there. Okay. So she's Radha Krishna saying, but doesn't that go the other way as far as women as being attracted by men? There's definitely some peacock strutting around, yeah. Well, the problem in our society is because it's so sexually crazed, being fed by the media. What does the media feed us? Feeds us muscle-bound men and women who are impossibly beautiful, impossible for most women to be that beautiful and have those kinds of bodies, and all young and attractive. That's what we're fed. So we're very sexually stimulated. So, she's asking, does it go the other way? Aren't women also being attracted? Yeah, because men are also on the chase, and it's all in the vibe, you know. When you're around a person who's sexually on the prowl, that vibe disturbs the heart. When you're around a person who is not, you don't feel anything. Am I right? Yes or yes? You know I'm right. When you're around someone who's sexually pure, you feel sexually pure. When you're around someone who's not sexually pure, you likely feel disturbed to one degree or another. So yes, and men's psychology is they want to be sexually attractive to women, even if they're married. In a cultured society, that wouldn't be the case. In a cultured society, men are not trying to be sexually attractive to other women, married men. And married women are not trying to be sexually attractive to other men. Not even that. In a cultured society, there's not this free range attraction going on. But it's more well planned out. Astrology is looked at. Parents are involved. So there's not this free range of what we call radio free active lust, just sent out in the atmosphere and everyone is disturbed by it. When I was a college student, right at the time of the sexual revolution, and I remember the atmosphere was so surcharged with sexual energy that I found it difficult to study in the library. Because it was just like you could cut the sexual energy with a knife. It was just agitating the mind. So Prabhupada said education means to be a brahmachari, to learn self-control. So what do kids learn in university? They don't learn self-control. They learn how to party, many of them. That's their for many it's their first experience with really being sexually active. So anyway. Yes. So now Bhaktin Carol says, I wear long skirts, I'm covered, and I'm not interested in meeting men. However, when I'm out, many times men will stop cars and ask me to get in. When I'm riding buses, men will ask to date me. When I'm taking taxis, the taxi drivers ask to have relations with me. I was at Walmart and a man asked me out. I am a plain-looking older woman. That's insanity. When you were saying that, I thought, well, you must be like a 25-year-old model if that's happening. But if you're not and that's happening, yeah, that's these men are all, they're all hungry and their appetites are not being satisfied because they're not happily married. Or maybe these men are married and they're not happy and they're not controlled because our society is feeding that. I mean, if you actually just look at it, look what's in the movies, look what's on TV, look what's on talk shows, look what's in songs. It's just, if you really look at it with a fine-tooth comb, you'll find it everywhere, which is why it's so important to avoid these things, because This is why these men are like that. They're just getting it everywhere, and now they're getting it on the internet. It's just coming. You know, before the internet days, if a man wanted to view pornography, he'd have to go into some nightclub or buy some pornographic literature, and he'd have to like put it in the bag and cover it up and then take it home and hide it from his family. And now all you have to do is just go on the internet. And now what they're finding is that most of the pornography on the internet, they're finding, is being watched during business hours. This is what guys are doing at work. So these poor guys are being victimized terribly by what's going on. That's pretty sad, Carol. So Bhakti and Carol says, about women, beware, husbands might become ajamils. Should husbands be looking for illicit relationships with wife? Yes. Just because a man is married, or just because a woman is married, doesn't mean anything. It's just men and women, when they come together, there's got to be boundaries. So in our class on sexual purity, we talk about boundaries. We say it's not just enough to make the effort to be sexually pure, but it has to manifest within the boundaries you keep within your life to protect yourself, because we're all weak. I was just reading a letter. I was reading a story in which one sannyasi had fallen down, and then he'd come back, and Prabhupada said, just whatever is done in the past is the past, just forget it. And this sannyasi had been alone preaching somewhere, and Prabhupada said, well, of course he fell down, he was alone. He didn't have any association. So, in other words, Prabhupada's saying, you can't artificially be strong in a situation where you don't have proper association, or you are opening yourself up to sexual stimuli. So there has to be boundaries. So a man who wants to remain faithfully married to his wife will create boundaries in his relationships with women, and he won't transcend those boundaries. Vice versa, women will do the same thing. So often that doesn't happen. People don't have boundaries. So often people are attracted to other people at work. The woman's more beautiful than the wife. The man's more attractive or kinder. You find sometimes a husband will never say any kind words to his wife, and then the wife will go to work and all these men are saying kind things to her. Whoa. And they're all trying to be funny with one another. They're all trying to attract one another. I mean, not all, but often this is what's going on. Just, you know, when these are subtle things to look at. So yes, should husbands be looking for illicit relations with wife? Well, this is a whole other issue we talked about yesterday. Not yesterday, last week. In Christianity, they're very, very strong about remaining celibate until you get married. And then after you get married, they're very, very strong about enjoying sex. I mean, they don't say, well, when you get married, it's okay to have sex. They say, when you get married, go for it, because that's what God wanted you to enjoy. And they believe, as far as I can tell, they believe two things. Number one, God created that, so he just wanted you to enjoy it in marriage, and it's a gift from God, and enjoy it fully. And they don't understand how it affects the couple. They believe that unless the couple is having good sex, they won't be happy. And secondly, they believe that's what protects a marriage and protects a man and a wife from illicit connections with others, because you're being satisfied at home. Now, strictly speaking, we don't believe that, but there's truth to that, because not every man can control himself completely, and not every woman can. And therefore, sometimes if they're not satisfied at home, they will be looking for other relationships. And therefore, I would suggest when anyone's in that situation, they take some counseling from other devotees and discuss what to do. I don't want to generalize here. I have my own philosophy, which is I wouldn't go there personally. But some people who are not spiritually strong or in certain situations may need to, temporarily. Anyway, that's a whole other Pandora's